This episode contains sensitive material around the topics and themes of youth suicide awareness and prevention. Listener discretion is advised. I know a lot of people listen to this podcast with their kids in the car or in the general vicinity, and I want to give you a clear heads up and a warning that this is probably an episode best listened to alone. And then you can make the determination of whether it's something you want your kids to hear or how you want to approach these topics, if at all, with your kids. I also advise that you take a moment to consider if you are in the headspace to listen to an episode around this topic and these themes today. And if so, make sure that you're taking care of yourself, pause as needed, have a drink for hydration, and especially take some time to move your body both during and afterwards, whether that's stretching or taking a walk. All of those types of self-care can help with processing the weight and the gravity of the information in this episode. This is a really, really important topic, and my guest was generous to offer not just a code to get certified in suicide awareness and prevention for free in the self-paced course that she has available on her website, but also we're going to be collaborating together to lead a dedicated live workshop specifically for listeners of the Troop Leader Experience, since her certification program is usually geared specifically toward parents, and there is an added layer of the responsibility that we have for taking care of other people's kids as troop leaders. So stay tuned for more information at the end of this episode, and also make sure you're watching your inbox or the Facebook group for more information about that session. It is 100% free, and we would love for you to attend because I do believe that this information is very important. Without further ado, here's the episode. Welcome back to the Troop Leader Experience podcast. This is going to be a very interesting and informative conversation, and I put a trigger warning at the front of this episode, but I just want to reiterate here, we are going to be talking about themes involving mental health and suicide. So I want to go ahead and make sure that's out there. First of all, I know a bunch of you listen with your kids, and I want to make sure you have the opportunity to listen to this interview yourself first before you invite your kids into this episode or into conversations about these topics. Okay. So without further ado, my new friend, will you please, and I'm so excited, we've connected over some other stuff recently, and I knew that I had to have you on, but please introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Hi, I am Susie Freeman. I'm the founder of the Teen Warrior Academy, and I started this back in 2017, really getting involved in suicide prevention work because of my boys' careers, military and police. I knew I needed to be ready, and I knew I needed to understand warning signs and all of that. So that's really where I started. And it's just led me on this journey of what makes somebody become suicidal or feel hopeless. It starts early. It starts early in the young years, not having ways to handle stress, anxiety, trauma, and all of that. So I really wanted to make a difference, get kids on the right path, teach them modalities. And here we are with the Academy, and I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. Can you explain a little more? What is the Academy? What do you do? What does it look like? What is available? And then we'll dig in more to some of those underlying themes and like why you started this.
Yes. So I started initially working one-on-one mentoring sixth grade through high school, boys and girls. And through that time, through the years, it's evolved into more of a group method. I don't really do a lot of one-on-one. It's more of a group method. I think that peer-based works better. And I have four basic programs that I put them through: Grace and Grit, True Grit, Warrior's Edge, and the Relationship Grit. And they cover different things, but they really all go back to teaching, like Warrior's Edge. It really goes into executive functions and teaching the kids how to really be organized, have strategy, task initiation, strengthening their weaknesses and stuff like that. So that reduces the stress and overwhelm. The other courses, Grace Grit, True Grit, really touch on vulnerability, confidence, self-worth, awareness of self and others, just all of those things. And within those 12-week programs, each 90-minute session per week, we do you know, a lesson, but we also learn a modality, whether it's breath work, whether it's sound healing, journaling, some kind of modality to give these kids lots of options for lots of ways to release and to express themselves and communications. That's really what it's about. And then I also have the mentorship groups, which are basically peer-led. A mentor is there, but we really let it just be peer-led. There's no full curriculum. I've learned that when I try to put curriculum to it, the kids sometimes they just need a space to talk and hear others and relate. So we do include a book with it, but it's not very rigid, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually talk about that a lot as girls get older in Girl Scouts about how those of us who are overachievers really want to make sure that our meeting space is as high impact as possible for girls. But we have talked before on the show about how important it is that sometimes the most high impact thing a girl needs is a safe space to just be a girl with other girls. And I think that giving them the space to talk and to be social with each other is a really high impact thing. I totally understand the desire for, I want to pack as much curriculum into this as possible, and then also balance with, that's not always what they need. So yeah, I'm curious, can you give us some context? Because like just the idea of youth suicide is shocking, terrifying, heartbreaking. It's all the most mind-blowing and heartbreaking things. But can you give us some context, like what that threat looks like for our kids today?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot higher than it used to be. We're 10 to 25 year olds, second leading cause of death. And that's devastating. It's one every 11 minutes. And that's a human, one every 11 minutes, forgive me. But with that, I would say if we're talking in the context of like girls, what people don't realize is when you look at the suicide statistics, males are higher on that death factor. But what they're failing to see and people don't know is that females attempt four times more than males do because of all the different stresses and anxieties and pressures and ways that they do and don't handle emotion. The reason for, again, trigger warnings, the reason for the fact that men die by it more often than women is the method, the means they choose. Women are more apt for pills and things like that, where men more choose guns and such. So there's a lot of that in there to consider. I would say one of the things, I don't know if you asked that question yet, so I'll let you finish.
No,
I might get ahead of myself.
No, that's okay. Go for it, please. I'm already just on the edge of my seat, riveted and horrified, and I'm leaning all the way into this because I have shared on the show before, one of the girls who came to my troop had a really rough time before she found my troop. She had switched schools multiple times due to bullying issues and really had no friends and really even struggled with adults, former adults in her life. And she had been in a different troop before she came to my troop. It was a really negative experience. And she really found a home in my troop. And it took some time, but it ended up being a really wonderful thing for her. And when my troop disbanded in the midst of the pandemic quarantine days, she actually let me know then and has followed up since to reach out again to thank me again for holding that space in a way that she said she wouldn't be here anymore if it weren't for finding that. And I think we're leaning all the way in because as much as we don't want to believe that this is possible, that this could happen to any of any kids, to any kid, to any person, but we're specifically talking about kids here. I think whatever we can do to hold space is just the most important thing. So yeah, more context, go for it. I want to know all the things. I want to learn. It's hard, but I want to learn.
Yes. So I had went to, I don't know if you're familiar, might be something to look into, but her name's Emma Benway. She's in her 20s now, but when she was 16, super popular cheerleader. You wouldn't think anything looking at her outside in. Her parents say the same. They didn't know anything. And this is going to lead into just more than just using her as an example, but it's really a message to parents about how we communicate with our children. So Emma attempted suicide. She shot herself and she had to relearn to walk and lots of things. And she has a documentary out now that's amazing. But when you hear her story and kind of the why and how she got there, it's sad, but very simple. She said that she didn't go to her parents for help because every time she would go to them, they would just try to fix things. They would just try to correct it. They would lecture or this or that. And that's something that a lot of the teens I mentor and talk with feel the same. They can't go to their parent and just say, hey, I have this problem, or hey, I need help with this, because innately, as moms, dads as well, not as much as mothers, but we want to fix it. We want to take care of it for them. And we forget to just listen. So I encourage parents to ask the question when their kid's coming to them, just as I encourage the child to communicate, because this has to be a two-way street. But when you want to talk with your parents, or parents, when your kids come to you, you should ask three things. Hey, do you want me to listen? Do you want me to help? Do you want me to fix it? And that's it. Give advice, help, give advice, same scenario. And the kid in the same aspect should say, hey, mom, I have a situation I want to talk to you about. I just need you to listen and hear me out. I don't need you to fix it, and I don't want advice. So if we can learn to do that, that can open up the realms of communication massively. And that can massively reduce the attempts that these kids have and the hopeless feelings. And because the sad truth is, they are bogged down by all of these things, whether it's social media. And I'm not a super hard believer in it's just about social media doing this to your children, because I feel like if our kids have great confidence and great self-worth and good values, which is important, the parents teach this, that they have these good values, those sorts of things and being exposed to social media and being exposed to stuff outside of the home won't be as negatively impactful on them. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think, first of all, I think that tip for adults when kids come to them, or when they are hearing kids discuss things or bring up things, to be able to approach it with that question. I actually think that's a good life skill in all relationships, just my own two cents, of when you're talking to someone that you love and you're hearing them express whatever it is that they're working on or going through, and asking, are you looking for me to listen, or are you looking for me to contribute? Like, I am here to hold space for whatever you need, and getting that clarification. I think that's a really good life skill. And I think also, to your point, that's a good life skill for us to be helping girls practice, so that they can use that in all aspects of their life. In addition to, it's something we can actually do. But before we get into even more tactical stuff, because I'm sure you have more great advice, I want to go to the factors thing, because you mentioned social media. And I think, yeah, there's a lot of people out there who probably would make a lot of claims about how dangerous social media can be for all people, but especially for kids. But I'm curious, what are the leading factors? What could cause something so horrible?
Yeah, it's going to really depend on the kid. What people have to understand is that the teenage brain, and mind you, I'm not a therapist, this is just learning and raising five kids, but the teenage brain, it's a little harder to understand that something's not permanent. It's harder to grasp the fact that this mistake I made, or this situation, or this breakup or bullying isn't permanent. It isn't a permanent feeling. There's no end to it. So I think that finite thought that they have can lead them down that road to thinking, oh my gosh, there's no way I can fix this. There's no way I can go to my mom and humiliate myself by telling her what happened, or whatever the situation is. I think stress, of course, the pressure that the kids have nowadays. If you think about us as adults and just our normal day-to-day work, and when you have a lot of deadlines and you're not meeting them, or you're getting behind and just all this work and a certain emails come through and just all the things, and you get very overwhelmed. these children aren't fully equipped to know how to handle it. They're not fully equipped or taught how to recognize or regulate that emotion and how to separate some of that stuff. So I think the overwhelm comes a lot faster for them. And then it doesn't take much to trigger that very hopeless, no way out feeling.
Just really sad.
Yeah.
One thing that I have noticed, and we've talked a little bit on this podcast before about it, is the self-esteem issues that start with girls very young and their body image issues, their confidence in their own skills, their confidence in who they are, who they even want to be, a desire to be both seen and also invisible. But that starts so, so young. And I've witnessed it, not just like with my own kids, like you said, but also through Girl Scouts. I've witnessed it in mid elementary school, even. And I know you said you've done a lot of work with kids 10 and up, and 10 is very young. So yeah. I'm curious if you have anything that you want to explore or discuss, or anything that you've noticed as far as trends or like setting the scene for that. And also, like, when that comes up in when you're working with kids, like, how can you help? How can we help girls see them the way we see them, which is that they're amazing?
Yeah, it's interesting. I just came across something yesterday that I thought was pretty powerful, and I hadn't really thought about it in this way, but it's great, simple advice. A mom was talking about when you're complimenting and having conversation with your daughter from a very early age, never mention her physical appearance. It's always, your soul's beautiful. Oh, that's funny. I love the way you look at the world, or your sense of humor is amazing. All the things that are internal that have nothing to do with, oh, that's so cute. Oh, your face looks amazing today. Love your hair. If we can avoid those as much as we can, you want to give them like, hey, your outfit, you look beautiful today. Sure, we want that. But if we can avoid those and not make them the go-tos, then it never becomes about that external look. It never becomes about that external beauty. And the kids get more of, oh, well, my soul is beautiful. My heart is lovely. My kindness is good. I think if we can start there, that can be massive change. And I'm definitely going to try that with my 12-year-olds, because I'll tell you, junior high is not easy. We know that.
Yeah, it is really hard. I think that is such a good piece of advice, because I've found when I'm working with girls that when I can recognize things like that, like, I love the way you stand up for others. I love the way you talk about your friends when they're not in the room. I love the way you see the world. That's a good one. You have such great ideas. You're so creative. There's so many things that, and I love especially to point out, wow, you're great at this. It's like going to a way younger demographic, but there's a Bluey episode where they're all drawing around the table and you see all these different kind of art styles through the episode. And Bluey is being really hard on herself because she thinks her drawings are not good and she's embarrassed. And her mom tells her, you're great for, I can't remember if Bluey's 6 or 7 in that episode. You're great for a 7-year-old. And you're great at drawing dragons for a 7-year-old. Just keep practicing. And I think that's such a nice spirit. I think just saying, wow, you're so good at art when a kid is drawing. And so often, or if they're singing to themselves, like saying, wow, you have a really beautiful singing voice. It's amazing to watch them like have the light bulb moment of someone sees me. And yeah, complimenting their hair or their outfit or whatever, and or even their body, right? Let's say as girls are getting older, they're working really hard on losing weight or something like that, which is something we've talked about on this podcast before. And it's so hard. It's so hard because every girl's body is wonderful. And you're just like, I want to handle this well. And so how do I help? So anyways, all of that to say, people are making comments about those girls' appearances all the time, every day, everywhere, and each other's appearances and other women's appearances. But when you recognize something about a girl that is actually her, the impact of the compliment is so much bigger, because there it's, oh, wow, she knows me. She sees me. I'm a whole person to this troop leader. So then you get to be a person in her life who builds trust that way, because you actually see her as a whole person. So I love that. But yeah, anyways, junior high is really hard. So, and do you have any other tips for things that, in all ways, things that kind of a mentor or a troop leader who may not be the parent of the girl, like, how can we help girls feel good about themselves, feel good about the space that they take up, feel good about being here?
Yeah, I love some of the things you touched on. And it just got me to thinking, if we just keep it simple and we compliment people in general on character and values, that would be so amazing. But I think as a mentor, what I'm learning and what they really need is just to be heard. You had mentioned that earlier. It could have been while we're recording or previous to that, but they just really want to be heard and they want to be validated. Whether their thought process or feelings are right or wrong, they want to know we heard them. They want to know, hey, I hear you. I can see why you feel that way, but how about we get another perspective, or can we reframe that thought? One of the things I am working on right now with my oldest twin, she's 12, she'll be 13 in June, is she has a tendency, it's an all or nothing. And I'm sure you have seen this. It's, I have no friends. Everybody hates me. And if you can just go, okay, I could see where maybe you feel that way, but let's break it down. Let's unpack that. Do you genuinely think everybody hates you? And if you can really walk them through things, even getting it down to pinpointing with naming, yesterday you talked about Lily, and is she not your friend? Does Lily hate you? No, Lily doesn't hate me. We talk. So when you can really start pointing out the fine positives and not have it be this overarching, this all or nothing situation. And also, I'm noticing if we remind these kids to not sit in victim mode a lot, we need to remind them, hey, you have control, you have say, you can make a difference. So giving them that power and empowering them with tools, tasks, comments, anything, I think is going to be wildly helpful. And the later we wait, the harder it's going to be, but it's still possible, as we know. I started getting help for these things in my 40s. So if I would have had this when I was 15, life would probably be very different through like 20s and 30s. So the sooner we can start with the kids teaching them these things, the better we're going to be.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. I'm curious, what are some of the warning signs that we should be looking for or could be keeping an eye out for as a non-parent of these girls? And I say that specifically because, and some of you, your own kid is in your troop, but actually many of you probably, but I think a lot of times girls are different when their parents aren't around. And that is one of the big valuable parts of the space in Girl Scouts, is that it's a chance for girls to have each other and adults that hopefully they can trust and love and be validated by and supported by, that aren't their parents. And so I'm curious, like, as adults who are trying to lean in and create the highest impact opportunity for these girls, what are some kind of warning signs that a girl might be struggling?
I think first thing I always tell parents is intuition. It's never wrong. You as a parent, something is off, whether it's as extreme as suicidal behavior or it's just your kid is unhappy over a situation. We know this. So I say, follow your gut always, always, always. And some of the more obvious, I don't want to say obvious because they could be subtle and just last over time. But if you really just pay attention, again, follow your gut. Are there big changes? Have they suddenly stopped hanging out with the friend group they used to have? Do they stop going to church or super interested in church? Are they using drugs or alcohol? How are their grades? Is their character and normal life behaviors, is anything drastic? It can be eating, sleeping. Are they cranky? Do they cry a lot? And don't get me wrong, some of these sound just like, you know, a girl going through hormones. And it really can. A lot of the symptoms and signs of depression and things like that, and leading into suicidal ideation or thoughts, can be quite similar to just normal teen. And this is where I say, really pay attention. When your teen's doing normal things and you're like, oh, that could be a little hormonal, just like queue up, put your beacon a little higher and start really paying attention. Do a little research if you need to. Get familiar with more of the signs and symptoms, because obviously the more they have, the more likely and the more at risk they are. Pay attention to risk factors. Did they just go through a big breakup? Did a best friend just move? Did you move? Did they get denied into the college they really wanted? It can be things that don't seem wildly devastating. Life can be amazing and great, and suddenly they get the denial letter for the college of their dreams. That can be a trigger alone. So it's just all of those little things, really leaning into that parental intuition. And one of the next biggest things, if you have any doubt at all in anything, are they stressed, depressed? Do you feel like they're suicidal? Just ask the question. And the most simplest question you can ask, the better. For me, I tell people, hey, if you're feeling like your kid's going on this path, or any human is going on a path, just say, have you thought about killing yourself? And the way you ask is important. I know it sounds harsh, but the way you ask is important, because if you go to your child or a significant other and you're like, so you're not thinking about killing yourself, are you? When I say that to you like that, the first thing in your brain is, no, why would I? No, that's stupid. I wouldn't do that. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to put it in a judgy way. That's why the simplest, hey, are you stressed out? Hey, do you feel depressed? Hey, are you suicidal? The simplest, easiest, monotonal, caring mom voice you can do, dad voice, is best. And just get to the point, and then just sit and be ready to listen. And the other thing parents and people in general do is they feel like they have to relate, or they feel like they have to interject and compare. Oh yeah, I felt that. I had this happen to me when I was a teen. I remember. No, it's not about you right now. Listen to them, hear what they have to say fully and completely. And if you don't understand, don't say you understand, because they're going to know better. You can say, hey, I don't understand how you're feeling right now, but I see that's hard. Let me help you. Let's get you some help. Let's find somebody who can understand. If you just do that, offer them that beacon of hope, you can curb out about 99% of suicides and stop it dead in the track. If you just listen and you're there and you offer help, because they, again, it's not like people have the desire to die. And they say that suicide is not the problem. It's a perceived solution to a problem. So if we can give them another solution, suicide's off the table.
Wow. That's a really powerful phrase, because yeah, I think it just immediately goes to the panic place, right? Like, I'm just thinking to myself, if I thought a kid was struggling, if they had mentioned things to me or had noticed things, and I asked them the question and then they answered yes, I immediately go into full body panic. Like, what do you do, especially as a not the parent of the child? What do you do if someone, especially a kid, tells you yes to that question?
Again, let them talk, ask them, say, okay. You can ask them things. It seems odd. And I know some people have that misconception of, if I ask, that's planting a seed. That's not true. That's one of the number one myths. So just erase that right away. But there's nothing wrong with digging in deeper and knowing more details. Oh, okay. So you're thinking about killing yourself. Have you thought about how? It doesn't hurt to start a dialogue and having the dialogue while you're figuring out. Ask them too, hey, is there anybody you really trust that you'd like me to call that can help you? Because remember, if you immediately assume, oh my God, I better call their mom, I better call their dad. What if their mom or dad is the problem? You don't want to assume. So you want to ask them, is there anybody you trust that I can call that can come help us? And again, if they don't have answers for you, I think you intuitively are going to know, having more conversation on how, why, what, tell me more. And you can just say, oh, tell me more. I'd love to hear more. Okay. You can even ask them, how would you like me to respond? How do you want me to help you? Asking them in, I guess I wouldn't really say, how would you like me to help you? Puts it kind of on them. But I think maybe you understand when you're having the dialogue of, what can I do for you at the moment? Do you need a hug? Things like that. Who can I call? And if there isn't anybody and they don't give you somebody and you're really concerned for it, you never want to leave somebody in that space. You want to try to get them to the resource, to the help. So 911 is fine. Taking them to a clinic is great. That's probably more ideal. Or if there's a therapist near. Also, if they're religious, they might be comfortable going to their church. So there's just lots of things like that to ask them. But I don't think we should always just assume call mommy, call daddy for help. Because if that kid's opening up to you, there might be a reason they're not opening up to the parent. And I'm not trying to say negative stuff about the parent, please.
No, but I actually think that's a really important point, because I do think it's really hard when you're like in charge of other people's kids to walk that line of like in service to the parent and in service to the kid. Mm-hmm. What happens when those two things are in conflict? And I want to reiterate this, because you mentioned, do you want to hug or can I hug you? I think what I'm telling myself, what I'd like to commit to memory so far the most out of anything that's come out of this conversation, is asking directly. And then depending on how they respond and what they share, especially if they just say yes, I think my immediate, what I'd like to practice in mentally is, can I hold your hand? And then to say, because that's building that like physical connection with that person and creating some grounding, and then say, tell me more. And I think tell me more is such a good phrase that you mentioned, because not only does it give the person a chance to open up to you and tell you more information so you have more context, but also it gives, like what I'm thinking is, it gives me a chance to belay that panic, because I think it would immediately be panic. And I wouldn't want a kid who's feeling that way to feel like something they told me that I asked them directly caused me panic. So that gives me a chance to get my own bearings and to ask for more information. So tell me more, I think, is a really good one, a really powerful one. Now, you mentioned one of the biggest myths is that asking actually plants a seed. And I am very curious, because, yeah, I was wondering that. I've thought about that before when I've seen magazine covers, like a whole row of magazine covers talking about suicide and cyberbullying and things like that. And I think if kids are walking down an aisle at a grocery store, and these are the covers that are all over the magazines, is that planting seeds? And so I'm very curious about that. But also in general, what are some other myths about teen and youth mental health and suicide and depression that you might be able to help shed some light on?
Yes, it was. I was just thinking, I was like, she's probably going to ask me more of the facts. But yeah, talking about suicide or asking them is the number one myth. And they also think that those that do talk about suicide, it's like, oh, if so-and-so doesn't happen, I'm just going to kill myself, that they're just bluffing. They're just looking for attention and it's not real. So pay attention if people are mentioning it and talking about it, whether they're just doing it for attention or not. I think you take it seriously, because that's another myth we have. And there's also a myth that we think keeping secrets. Kids will keep that secret. So we assume that a kid is going to go, oh my gosh, this is so important, I'm not going to tell. But kids are very loyal to each other. So don't think for a moment that your best friend, your daughter's best friend, isn't going to keep that secret from you. She will. If she promises to her best friend, most of the time, unless they're educated properly or really feeling some way. But when you learn about it, a lot of the kids will be like, oh, she did say that a couple times. She told me not to tell you. So they will keep the secret. So don't assume they're going to tell. And then they say a lot of people think that the sudden suicide, the attempts and deaths just happen without warning. A lot of the parents be like, oh, I didn't even see it coming. No, if you were trained and you paid attention and you understood the signs and symptoms, you would know. Because then once that happens and they really look through and they get training, these parents that have went through an attempt or a death, they're like, oh my God, all the signs were there. Every single human I've talked to that's experienced that says, oh my God, now that I know, the signs were totally there. And one of the things I encourage parents is don't be afraid. One of the things holding parents back the most, and teachers and even psychologists have said this, and psychologists not as much as fear, but it's parents and other loved ones are afraid to ask the question because they don't want to hear the answer. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. Fear leads to denial. And that is a big problem.
Yeah, I can see that because, like I mentioned, just thinking about asking a kid and getting that response gave me full body panic. So I can even just still feel it down my neck, like down my back of these are kids, any kid, and it doesn't have to be a kid I know, but in this case, these are kids that I love. And yeah. I'm really personally invested in the idea that they're not okay is terrifying. And also how important then to for them to have a lifeline, literally, that they're wanted and that things are going to be okay. So, gosh, I just have so many questions that are just like racing through my head. But I want to know, first of all, about training, because that's heartbreaking to hear. I think like any parent who loses a child, especially a child who chose to end their own life, has to be struggling with what their role is, what their role is supposed to be, what they could have done differently, how they could have stepped in and prevented it. And that's horrible and awful. So when it comes to training for parents or for those of us who work with kids, what does training look like? First of all, where do you get training and how does that training look? What is it going to look like when they agree to do it?
Yeah, I am certified to teach it. And that's one of the things I do. One of my goals is to certify teens in it and families as well. I want to cover 1,400 of them this year, I'm hoping. But it's not hard. It's 45 minutes. You can do it. Like I even have on my website, and I'll give you a code where your listeners can go in and grab that certification for free. And they literally get a certification in it. But it's about 60 minutes. And you can sit and do it as a family or do it alone. I do them live as well. I'll do a Zoom live training and we'll go through them. But I also have, if somebody just can't make that window of time, then I have one that's on webinar style. I try to keep it a little bit exciting. I know that doesn't sound right, but I try to not have it be. But it really just covers, it's like I said, about 45 minutes to an hour. It covers signs, symptoms, myths, and how to ask the question. I covered that briefly, who to go for resources. And it's just a little piece to give you a bit of confidence. Like you said, if somebody came to you and they said that, you'd just be like full panic, like, oh my God, what do I do? But with a little bit of training, you might go, okay, I'm just going to sit. I'm going to ask the question. I love that. You said, I'll sit, ask if I can hold their hand, really just let them know you're there for them. But that typically wouldn't be someone's first response. They would probably immediately want to be into denial in some aspect and just be like, no, no way. You're kidding. You wouldn't do that. They want to try to convince the person that's not what they want to do. And that's not what this person needs to hear. So I think if we can just give people a little bit of what's basically three steps, it's called QPR, question, persuade, and refer. So you question them as to, wow, how high are you feeling this way? Tell me more. Persuade them to get help. Let them know that help is there. And again, this is not the solution to the problem, or this is not the problem. It's just a perceived solution. Hey, there's other ways to solve this problem. So if you can persuade them not to do it, whether it's a promise of, okay, I'll go see a therapist first. It was interesting. It just brought to me the doctor I got trained from, Paul Quinnett. He put a statement out in one of his books that I was reading. And he said, when he works with his patients, he'll tell them sometimes, this might sound terrible, but I understand it. But he said that he'll tell them, hey, I'm not taking suicide away from you as an option. I'm just asking you to give us another day. I'm asking you to go talk to this person. I'm asking you to get this kind of help. Because then they don't feel like you took everything from them in that moment. And of course, this is something a therapist would do. I would probably not say that to a child, but it's still a way to put that in your brain and your mind on how to deal with it. Again, one of the best comments is that one I said, that suicide isn't the problem. And if we all learn to realize that, then we can work around it easier. Because as moms, as humans, as dads, we have a lot of solutions. And if we just communicate and find out what a good solution is, then the problem is solved. And that problem was not suicide, right? So I think if we go there, it's a good start.
Wow. Yeah, that is just tremendously powerful. And I'm thinking, I don't know that I could say those same words to a kid either, but it does help to process as the adult thinking about kids. It does help to process the perspective that what that person who's experiencing this perceived solution, who's feeling this in their hearts and their minds, that autonomy is a really big piece of it. And tell me if this perception of what you were describing sounds as somewhat accurate, that in a lot of situations, it could be the case that if something or many things feel out of their control, that is a form of control.
Yeah.
Does that sound right? So that having that autonomy over, I need to feel like I have control over something, and this is something that I feel like I could control, is this perceived solution, and any other potential avenues feel like it's out of my control in that moment. So helping hold space for someone who's feeling that way, and also trying to help refer them, I think that's what you said the R was, right?
Yeah.
Helping refer them to other solutions so that can be a life-saving course of action.
Yeah. Do you mind if I share a tiny story? It's personal, but
go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So I had struggled, even though I started this in 2017, when my son first entered the military. It was interesting because through the training and stuff, I started to realize that my own struggles with suicidal ideation were not normal. I had struggled for years through my 20s. And mind you, I'm 50 now, so into my 40s. I didn't know that wasn't normal. I didn't know having the thought of, if it just gets too crappy, I'll just kill myself. I didn't know that was not normal until I started learning. And then when it really came down to, I'm like, oh, wow, this is serious. This is not something to mess with. I started getting help, going down ways and fixing things and getting better. And I'm not going to lie to you, once I fully had to release the fact that suicide was an option for me, it was almost like you took away a safety net, a part of me, an identity. I broke down. I was completely lost because I knew at that moment, this is no longer an option. Then I have to figure out and I have to deal with the crap. So it was wildly powerful, wildly devastating. It was so hard. And I know it sounds so dumb, but it was so hard. And it was a big struggle for me to work through. And when I tell people that, some get it. And then some just look at me, what? Like, how did you struggle getting rid of suicide as an option? But if we think of easy outs or ways to fix a problem, we have thoughts in our brain on how we'll do it. And once that became no longer an option, that was not easy for me. I had to find other ways. And it was learning some new modalities, learning some things. And I think if we can keep a little bit of that in our mind, we know that maybe that's how one of these kids are feeling. They just don't fully understand. And they just want out, like some say. So it's really about encompassing the whole picture of suicide and suicidal ideation.
Thank you for sharing, and thank you for trusting me and my community enough to be vulnerable in that way. And I can guarantee that you are not alone in this community, that somebody listening is relating to what you're saying. And also that as horrific as it is, that there are people in our troop communities, girls and their adults alike, who also can relate to that story. And I think that's why I really wanted to have you on the podcast, so that we could talk about it. And so I feel like this is very heavy, and I feel like this is important, but also it feels, if you don't mind, if you have a few minutes, I don't want to end on this.
Yeah, no.
I'd like to talk about, what are some things that we could do with the girls in our troops any ages from K to 12, what are some things we could be doing that are helping to build the resilience and the other skills? First of all, that they can support their friends who might come to them who are struggling, but secondly, so that they can work through things that feel like there is no other option, or what am I going to do? Or this is like, I want an out. What are some skills that we can help them build, or some activities or exercises we can do with girls so that when things happen that could be triggers for them, they have the resilience and the skill, the coping skills to not turn to that as an option?
Yeah, I think the first thing that came to my mind when I'm thinking about the girls is teaching them active listening skills and good communication, knowing that they can trust others and that they learn how to use their own voice to express what they need. Because if they're not doing that, how can we, as say, you troop leaders, parents, teachers, fully understand what they're going through? So I think if we can teach them those couple things, that's a great start. And doing it without judgment, trying to see it. And I know that's hard to say, really hard to say, but it's just the basics, just teaching good self-worth, empathy of others. Those kinds of things are important for the kids. But most importantly, if you're going to try to teach, because of course you're not going to want to go into and be like, if you ever think of killing yourself, don't. You can't just come out with that sentence. But letting people know that everything has a season, letting these kids know, junior high, sophomore year, people aren't going to remember college. People aren't going to remember high school. Just letting them know everything has a season. And I think also as a parent, sharing your own stories and struggles when it's appropriate. I learned that with my kids. It was when it was appropriate. There are certain relationship. I had physical abuse early on before I had kids. I didn't share that. My youngers don't know that right now because there's no reason my 12-year-olds need to know that. My oldest daughter, when she started getting to dating and I noticed somebody was getting possibly a little emotionally abusive and stuff, I felt it was appropriate to tell the story. It was appropriate to share my life with her and my experiences. And that helped her make decisions that were smart. So I think knowing that, just always being there and being first to communicate with your kids so that they know in the household, it's a safe space to just share whatever they need to share. There's another fast story I'll tell you where I think parents need to pay attention. And me, this was, I won't go into full detail, but this is my high school son, but he was having a meltdown, senior year meltdown, 2 a.m. knocking on my door. Mom, him and his girlfriend broke up. And he's just telling me the story. He's just venting. He's brain dumping and just vomiting everything on me. And in that moment, things are coming out where I'm like, oh God, as a mother, right? So I think while these children are expressing themselves and telling about a problem, I guess I could think of, I don't know, an example. Let's just say you've forbidden your kid from hanging out with someone, or you've had conversation. This is a bad person. They can't, or the certain place they're not allowed to be. Now, let's say your kid's telling you this story and it's not really related to this place, but in the midst of this story, they're like, yeah, and we were over at the Circle K and that. Do not in that moment go, well, wait, you were at the circle. You're not supposed to be at the Circle K. Don't do that. Just know and put that in your pocket. I'll address that with her later. Don't suddenly attack another problem that she revealed in a different problem. I hope I'm saying that.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. And I think a lot of the things that have come up in this conversation are like what your natural instinct is. Mm-hmm. And I hope that there's some comfort in knowing that our natural instincts and our natural desires to respond a certain way, like that's something that we share and that comes from a place of love and protectiveness and wanting these kids to be safe, and then realizing that the best way to help them to safety might look different than what your gut reaction or gut instinct tells you. Yeah. And that's where I think training can really come in handy. So can you reiterate about that training? That information is going to be in the show notes, but can you reiterate that? And also whatever other resources or places people can follow you. I know this might be like a loaded question with a lot of answers. So totally anything and everything that we can find, follow you, learn from you, and any resources that might help our kids.
Yeah, for me, it's Suzie Freeman, SuzieFreeman.com. That'll lead you to lots of places. But on there, if you do the /suicide prevention, you can access some things. And like I said, I'll give you a special code you can put in the show notes and share with your listeners so they can get it for free and sign up for it, whether it's live or the webinar style. And I suggest they do that. As long as they feel like their child is ready, I'm as young as 10, absolutely can watch this training and benefit from this training. So I'm happy to provide other resources. Please let anybody, you guys can email me. Teen Warrior Academy is there as well. We'll be rolling out some free stuff soon, little mini courses and lessons. I think I have some stuff, EFT and some modalities out there. 988 is a good resource I push out. It's a number. I give out these little 988 teddy bears because I just feel if they have a little bit of something, you don't know if your kid's in their bedroom and they're stressed out or just start freaking out. Maybe you're not home. They turn around, they look, oh, 988. They can text it. They can call it the teen lifeline. Resources like that I think are good. And honestly, I just open dialogue. Just always have conversations. Stay involved in your kid's life. I call the big kids and I'm like, how's your brain? How's your mental state? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? Are you lonely? Sometimes they're like, Mom, seriously. But sometimes they come to me and they're like, I know I can always come to you. And I'm so glad you ask, even though it seems annoying. And I don't do it weird, but I think you should just let them know that you want to be involved and you want to listen to that. So I think those are just some of the bigger lessons, is just really being there and listening, letting them know you've heard them.
Yeah, thank you so much. I feel like I've learned a lot here. I'm definitely looking forward to it. It's a weird way to say it, but no. I'm so glad that you have these resources available. And I know that I'm going to eagerly and enthusiastically pursue that training. I think the more information that we're armed with about how to help girls have a safe space to be girls, right? That's what we talk about on this podcast a lot, is like, creating a safe space for girls to be girls. And I think that is just so related to this. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for coming and sharing so much of your wisdom with us. And thank you for the opportunity to get this training for free. I know I feel very confident that there are a good number of people from this community who will want to pursue that. And to you listening, thank you for hanging in there with us this far. This was a big topic. And I think what's really important to you, for you to do from here, the information is going to be in the show notes. I'll also put it in the Facebook group so that you'll be able to access it. You don't need to take action on this right now, other than to take care of yourself. So if you have gotten this far with us, go for a walk, take a stretch, drink some water, do something that is going to give you a quick dose of joy or dopamine. Make sure that you are taking care of yourself. That is so important. These big topics are important, but so is self-care. I just want to say thank you so much again, Suzie. And also just send anyone listening, anybody in this community, just so much love. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. I know this is a tough topic, but if you're like me, this conversation is going to be in your head for a while. There are some major takeaways from this episode that have really stuck with me and I've found myself talking about with the people in my life since I had this conversation with Suzie. And in addition to what she offered in the episode, which is that you could sign up for her certification for 100% free as a listener of this podcast, we've also decided to do a live session together as a collaboration, 100% free, specifically to certify troop leaders. So if you're interested in getting certified in suicide awareness and prevention for youth and teens, there are two options for you that are both 100% free. The option that I'm recommending is that you join me and Suzie live on Sunday, April 21st at 4 p.m. Pacific or 7 p.m. Eastern. Or you can also sign up for a self-paced, if you can't make that live session on the 21st, you can sign up for a self-paced session yourself that's been pre-recorded. And either way, it's 100% free. So the link is going to be in the description of this episode, in the show notes, in the description box. And you have two choices. You can use the code SCOUTS to access the self-paced pre-recorded version for free, or you can sign up for the live class on April 21st by selecting live training with Susie and use the code SCOUTSLIVE to access and book that for free. I'll be there and I hope you will too. And I hope that this episode and the certification option is helpful for you.